ICQ Podcast episode 422, Bunkers on the Air Station. Well, hello and welcome, fellow amateur radio enthusiasts, to this, our 422nd episode of the ICQ Amateur Radio Podcast, supported in this episode by our monthly and annual donors. In this episode, we join Martin, M1MRB, Dan, KB6, November Uniform, Karen, KD2, Golf Uniform Tango, and Edmund, Mike Zero, Mike November Golf, to discuss the latest amateur radio news. Myself, Colin, M6BOY, rounds up the news in brief. And this episode's feature is a feature on the Bunkers on the Air Station, GB0, Romeo, Oscar, Charlie. Now, your ICQ podcast is an independent, advert-free show, giving you independent views and news on the amateur radio hobby. To do that, we kindly ask you to send us a donation if you found as though you had some value from our show. And it's a very simple system we ask for. It's a value-for-value system. So if you found value, turn that into a monetary amount. Go to icqpodcast.com/donate and say whatever you send our way goes towards our running costs and helps keep the show advert free. So we'd ask you to consider that in this episode. Right now, we're going to join Martin, Dan, Karen and Edmund to discuss and generate thoughts about the latest amateur radio news, including young DXs prepare for Guyana and ARRL review decisions. As always, hope you enjoy.
So, hi guys, and welcome to episode 422 of the ICQ podcast and tonight's news roundtable. For that episode tonight, I'm joined by Dan Romachek, KB6NU. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Martin, and hi, Karen, and hi, Edmund.
Yeah, we're all here. You mentioned Karen. Karen's with us, KD2GUT. Hi, Karen.
Hi there, and belated Happy New Year to all of us.
Yeah, it was I think we had a good new year, but let's see how the rest of the year goes. And last but not least, my side of the pond, Mr. Edmund Spicer, M0MMG. Hi, Edmund.
Hello, Martin. Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, so all being well, I think we've got some good ones. Now, nice little news story, because we keep on about getting youngsters in the hobby, but youngsters are doing the expeditioners prep for a trip to Guyana. Now, these are four young guys at the moment, all in their 20s, going off to do a de expedition. Karen, you put this one in, so I'm going to let you go first on this one. What do you think?
Okay, thanks, Martin. These guys are finally, I should say, finally getting that trip to Guyana. This was a de-expedition they had planned a couple of years ago, but the pandemic had other plans for them. So they stayed put for a couple of years and got even older. But when you're in your 20s or even late teens, you have the luxury of being delayed by a couple of years. These are each one of them, Philip Springer, DK6SP, Jamie Williams, M0SDV, Sven Lavrik, DJ4MX, and Tommy Varro, HAHRT, are veterans of all sorts of activities, from de-expeditions to WRTC. Tommy and Philip were actually on the youth team, Y82D, at the World Radio Sport Team Championship in Germany a while back. So these guys know their way around the bands, and they're taking off early February. They're going to be on the air from the 14th to the 24th, all the HF bands, and they're doing, looks like, most of the modes, of course, CW and SSB, FT8, RIDI. And it's interesting because they are committed not just to administering to the shape of the ham radio landscape going forward in the years ahead, but they are active players in what's going on now. And I think adventure radio de-expeditioning, while we hear a lot about it among the older hams, These are youngsters who already, by virtue of their experience, are seasoned hams. So this is pretty exciting. And who knows? Kids who are getting into ham radio can look at this and really relate to young hams like these guys. As I say, they're all friends. They're all in their 20s. They're going to grow, hopefully grow old, or I should say older, as the years go by in ham radio. And this is a fine example of what you can do if you have the resources and the ability. So let's be listening for them. The call sign is 8R7X. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, this is a good one. And it's nice to see that youngsters are doing it on their own without being supervised. You know, we could do with more youngsters in the hobby. And we keep saying, let's get more youngsters in the hobby. But there's no point in getting them in the hobby if they don't do anything. And I think this is showing that people are doing. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I think that this is great that they finally got to go. You know, COVID really affected so many of us. And I'm sure they were very disappointed that they weren't able to go a couple of years ago. But so it's a good thing that they were able to go this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's say I wish them all the best. Now, Edmund, I think you might be able to work down that far. What's your path into Guyana like? And would you ever go at working them?
Well, I'm not a DX chaser, but unlike other DX expeditions, the fact that this does involve young people, who we always want to encourage, of course, I might go further out of my way to try to work them than I would for just any other de-expedition. It would partly depend on what antennas I had in the air at the time and whether any storms that we might have over the next few weeks take out any of my antennas. We had strong winds in the UK the weekend before release, and that has slightly damaged my 20 meter antenna, for example. But there's a good choice of bands to work them on, because they're going to be active everywhere in the HF spectrum, with the exception of 5 megahertz, 60 meters. And they're also going to be on a VHF band as well, 6 meters, 50 megahertz. So let's hope that the maximum usable frequency goes sky high all the time that they're on the air. But I wish them well. And I just hope that the conduct of the pile-ups that they will undoubtedly have will be worthy of them. And there's loads of information on the website that they've set up that covers everything you could want to know, from how to get a QSL card through to preferred frequencies. And they do mention that they will very rarely, if ever, be operating simplex. So if you want to work them, you will have to press the split button and listen up from the frequency that they're transmitting on. So, yeah, all power to their elbow, Martin. Back to you.
Yeah, well, it all sounds good. And let's wish them all the best and hope it all goes well for them. Now, next news story, some ARRL reversals and deferred decisions. I preferred your title, Dan, but we are a clean podcast, so we can't necessarily run with that one. But I'll open to you, because I know you feel quite strongly about this one.
Yeah. So what this issue is that the ARRL board wanted to vote on some new bylaws that, in the opinion of some, would severely restrict the ability of the directors to communicate things to their constituents in their divisions, and could possibly give some on the board the power to actually throw elected people off the ARRL board. And so it's a complicated issue, probably more complicated than we can really get into here. And I would just refer people to some of my blog posts about that, and if they're interested. But this stuff came to light just recently because the ARRL board has one of their annual meetings toward the end of January. And this meeting just happened to take place last weekend. But news of what they were going to try and vote on sort of leaked out beforehand. It wasn't in the official agenda, which the ARRL publishes, but news of what they were going to try and do leaked out. And so there was actually a pretty big backlash by the membership. And as a result, they've postponed action on this bylaws change. And I use the word postpone because it's not dead. It's not like they said, oh, no, we're not going to do this. It said basically that they're going to, you know, they've decided not to vote on it at this time. So those of us who are ARRL observers are going to be keeping an eye out on this issue. But, you know, like I say, it's kind of complicated. So we don't really have the time to really delve into it. But on my website, there are links to a couple of YouTube videos and statements by current directors and a statement by the fellow who was the ARRL first vice president. And, you know, just a lot of stuff going on that some members didn't think was all on the up and up. So have a look at my website and take a look at some of the videos and the links there. On the other hand, they did do a few things which are really good things, or at least one thing. They are going to start offering full-time students who are 21 years or younger a free associate membership. So that's a good thing. They're also going to be reintroducing life membership for those 70 and older. Of course, what they said about this was they're going to offer it in a revenue neutral way, quote unquote. So I don't know if that's going to be a great deal or not. But you know, they did a few other things at this particular annual meeting. So have a look, and see what you think. But this was a really big issue, and there was lots of emails and videos flying all over. And you know, if you're interested at all, have a look and see what you think.
I hear where you're coming from, Dan, and I think one of the things that struck me from what you've just said and what bits I'd picked up is if you have an open policy, if you have, like we do on the ICQ podcast, we speak our mind. It's our individual choice to say, and nobody gets restricted of their opinion. And if you are honest and open and you can put a valid argument down, then I don't see what the problem is. I think a lot of big companies and organizations have secret agendas that are not valid for that organization. And if we're all honest about it, what we're doing, and rightly, then people will go with you. If they don't agree with you, at least they'll be able to look at it and go, well, actually, I might not have agreed with you, but in fairness, what you're telling me is I can understand where you're going from. Is that what have I hit it down or not?
Well, so that was one of the things that was alleged, that, you know, they were trying to do things in kind of a secret manner. And, you know, that's just bad for the ARRL and bad for amateur radio. I'll give you an example. Sometimes last summer, they were able to, I don't know if it's change a bylaw or change of some other kind of document, to require that at least five directors had a call for a roll call vote for them to actually take that roll call vote. Previously, it had been only one director. One director could say, hey, look, I want a roll call vote, and then they would have to do a roll call vote. Now it takes five directors to call for a roll call vote, which what does that mean? Well, that means that some of these votes are going to be more secret. You're not going to know how your director voted on a particular issue. And, you know, that's just a bad thing. You know, the folks will say, oh, well, we just want to, make the meetings go faster and more expeditious. But you know, the effect is going to be that the ARRL board would be, and this is by this bylaw or operating procedure is in effect, that the effect of this is going to be that it's going to be more secretive. You know, you're not going to know how your director voted on some of these issues. So, you know, that's just one example. But, you know, like I say, read all these documents and read some of the videos. You know, a lot of people that were in the know about this were against these changes. One of them that presented on a Rat Pack video, which you can see on YouTube, was a former vice director of the Pacific Division. And he laid out a pretty good case, in my opinion, on why these were bad changes. So, yeah. Anyway, we fought this battle 5 years ago. I don't know if you all remember that, but we fought this battle kind of 5 years ago when they actually did enact some of these restrictions, and the member reaction was so great that they rolled them back. Well, here they're kind of trying to do the same thing, and you know the reaction was equally virulent, and as a result, they didn't even get to the enactment part this time. They said we're going to postpone the vote. So that's the issue.
Right. Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah, it sounds to me, Karen, like if you don't agree the first time, I'm still going to keep putting it forward. They do, and that's what it sounds to me. Or well, I asked Dad, and he said no, so I'm going to ask Mum. Is that the sort of things going on?
Well, you know, what is it they say? Salesmanship begins when the other person says no, which is a saying I've heard again and again over time. The thing here, I mean, Dan pretty much covered a lot of what needs to be said, but I did want to add, transparency is important. Transparency breeds trust as much as one can have trust in any corporate entity. You know, people are elected to represent the membership. If there's going to be a secret agenda or not completely forthcoming agenda, that sits badly. That leaves a bad taste in everyone's mouth. The thing that really troubled me about this is put something on the table and leave it on the table if you're going to act on it, because it sure looks bad to say, oh, okay, we're gonna act on this, and then never mind. Again, you want to talk about having confidence. You either act or you don't act. I'm glad it was pulled back. Don't get me wrong, but this should not have happened in the first place. And quickly about the membership, super for the students, for the young kids. Go for it. Sign up, kids. Sign up if you're a full-time student. Do it, because you will have access to some things that will help you in amateur radio. As to the 70, yeah, but as to the 70 plus, see, the very young and the very old, you start out life lucky and you end up life lucky. Let's see what happens with that. I it hasn't happened yet on the life membership, so I don't know. I don't know what that's going to mean. But that's really my thoughts on it. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, well, there's some interesting things that have come out of this, and I do agree with you. Transparency and standing by your decisions. And, you know, not everybody will agree with everybody, but if you at least make a decision and stand by it, or are willing to listen, then, you know, you can't be ripped apart. If you do things in secret, you get ripped apart, I'm afraid. Edmund, I know this isn't a UK story, but it's got transparency is important, isn't it?
Yes. That's the short answer. The slightly longer answer is I'm not uninterested in what the ARRL does. I would like the league to succeed. I would like every national society to succeed. So I'm not uninterested, but I am disinterested. I'm not a member. I don't benefit personally from anything the league does. I don't suffer any detriment personally from anything the league does. So I don't follow their everyday activities particularly closely. So I don't really feel qualified, both morally from not being a member point of view, but also from the knowledge point of view. I don't feel qualified to be able to say anything meaningful, really, other than, as you rightly say, Martin, transparency always and in all contexts is important.
Certainly is. Well, I'm sure this one will run for a while, Dan, and you'll get a few more blog posts out of it, I'm sure. But we'll keep monitoring this one, I'm for sure.
All right.
Yeah. Next news story, Ham Club provides mobile radio donations for the humanitarian effort in the Ukraine. Karen, you raised this one. I'm going to let you go first on this one. What do you think?
Okay. Thank you, Martin. This story is a perfect example of what amateur radio can be, philosophically and in action, non-political, people helping people. I mean, we are certainly licensed because we have the ability to help in emergencies. And in this case, the help being given is an emergency on the other side of the planet. But again, people helping people and hams being who they are. This is a donation of 14 mobile radios, not necessarily ham radios. These are mobile radios, HTs, along with simple designs for homebrew antennas that can be built on site. The donation was given by a club in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that formed a nonprofit. Well, they're nonprofit to begin with, but formed a subgroup within the club to do such a humanitarian gesture with a small group of hams who are members of the club. And they raised funds and shipped the radios and the antenna designs that they came up with to a group called Care for Ukraine. That's care4ukraine.org. One of the founders, or I think the founder of this organization, is the brother of one of the hams in the club. And he asked his brother, Art Nichols, K-I-5-G-O-L, would he ask his fellow hams in the club if they could do anything to help volunteers in the field with communicating with one another as they minister to the medical, nutritional, and educational needs of families who've been displaced by the war over in Ukraine. This is not, to the best of my knowledge, being done in an active war zone. These people are displaced families. They do not have refugee status. And they're pretty much, their lives are in limbo. So that's where that's at. They were shipped. The equipment was shipped. The shipment is being put to use. The money was raised, and the Ham Club goes forward with seeing how else they can assist them. They've over in Ukraine, they've created small micro networks. The equipment, which is solar powered in some cases. And in use for non-military, as I said, humanitarian purposes. And I saw this story and I said, yeah, you know, this is good. We're not just doing drills for power outages and tsunamis and simulated emergencies, which is all wonderful and important, but we're doing real life issues here. And we're helping save lives and sustain people who are not living under the best of conditions. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, certainly it's interesting. And as I mentioned to you at the start, Sutton and Cheam had a talk on this last Thursday and how amateurs in the UK are shipping out all sorts of redundant amateur gear and generators and things like that. So it's a worldwide thing. It's great the guys in the States are doing this, and it does sound as though you're doing a great job there. Edmund, You know, what's your thoughts of shipping gear out there?
Well, I just hope it ends up being used for good and worthy purposes and doesn't end up falling into the wrong hands, if you know what I mean. I seem to remember reading decades ago, probably in Shortwave magazine, I would think. This was long before I became a radio amateur. And there was a war going on somewhere, and I can't remember where now, and radio equipment was shipped out for humanitarian purposes, and some of it ended up falling into the hands of people that it shouldn't. And the upshot was, rather than it being used for humanitarian stuff, both sides used it to shout obscenities about each other's mothers to the other side on, I think it was HF marine frequencies or something off the wall like that. So yeah, it's a good initiative, but like I say, I just hope that it gets used by the people who should be using it for the purposes it should be used for.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. What's your thoughts on this one, Dan?
Well, that's a good point, Edmund. And, you know, that's sort of one of the issues that have been brought up here with all the other U.S. aid to Ukraine is, you know, whether all this aid is going to the right places or not. On the other hand, I like this a lot. I think this is a great idea, and I actually might look into this further and maybe get you know, my club or a group of clubs together to do something similar.
Yeah, well, that would be a good one, Dan. And as I say, it's an interesting story. Humanitarian aid is always something that's needed, so that was a good one. Move to our next news story. And, okay, it's kind of an announcement, but I thought it'd be fun because people might miss this one. But QRP self-spotting website. So, nice little website. You can put yourself up on it. Hopefully, people will find you. Edmund, what's your thoughts on this one?
Well, I've looked at this, and there are several things I like about it, and a couple of reservations, shall I say. I won't say bad things, I'll say reservations. Things I like. Number one, you don't have to register for an account and log in. You can just go straight onto the web page, type information in, and it goes onto the website. Number two, it's very basic, so it's not data heavy. If you were out and about somewhere and you were somebody who had a pay-as-you-go contract on your smartphone rather than a contract where you paid for data, this wouldn't use a lot of data to put information on there. Third thing I like about it is it's not limited to HF. You can spot yourself if you're on 2 meters or 70 centimeters as well. The reservations... The first reservation is the same as the positive thing that I mentioned, because you don't need to register for an account. Anybody worldwide literally could go on this website, type in any old rubbish they felt like, and on the face of it, it would just get, you know, uploaded onto the website without any filtering or questioning. Second thing, be careful with what information you put in there. I put my call sign in and the frequency where I was going to spot myself. I picked a frequency right in the middle of an HF broadcast band, miles away from any amateur bands anywhere in the world. And no warnings or errors came up. Now, admittedly, if I'd actually done the final step and clicked on the submit spot button, then maybe an error would have flashed up at that point with my non-amateur frequency, but I wasn't going to click on it to see what happened, because if it had, then been published on the website, I would have probably looked rather stupid apart from anything else. And the third thing is, this is purely self-contained, for now anyway. No spots that were on this webpage had appeared on the main cluster, like DX Heat, for example. So I wouldn't expect it to flow in the opposite direction, because a cluster like DX Heat wouldn't know which spots were QRP and which weren't. So that's fair enough. But I did half expect the spots on this page to also appear on DX Heat or DX Summit or something like that, but they didn't. This looks like it's a purely self-contained thing, which may be a good thing or may not be. I don't know. There are already quite a few users by the looks of things. So I hope that it will become more and more successful with every passing week. But as things stand at the moment, if you spot yourself on there, your audience could be rather limited. But having said all of that, Martin, I think that the good things about it far outweigh my reservations. So I would certainly encourage people at the very least to have a look at the website. And as well as the spotting bit, there's also a chat box as well, where you can type anything you like within reason, and other people visiting the website will see your information and comments and that kind of thing. So a thumbs up from me. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it's a thumbs up from you. And, you know, it's one of these things. The gentleman who's done this has come up with an idea. He's got it to fruition. He's made it available to all of us. He'll probably listen to some of the comments from us and other people. And Mark 2 may also improve it even more. So, good one. Dan, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this. And it should help QRP folks get in touch with one another. I really do like this this chat window. I think, in a way, that's one thing missing from the POTA website. It'd be nice to, chat back and forth about, park-to-park stuff and all that. But, yeah, I mean, anything that makes it easier for us to make contact, the better, right?
Yeah, I would say. It's a nice little one. Now, Karen, you told me you don't always do, or don't very rarely do QRP, but I still think it's a nice little tool for our arsenal.
Oh, I love this. I love this tool for sure. I've done QRP a couple of times. One time I actually did a POTA activation entirely QRP without realizing it. I simply forgot. I always turn my radio off after I've dialed it back down to 5 watts. Just I always like starting the radio at 5 watts and checking everything before I take it up to 30. But I did the entire activation without knowing it in 5 watts and did fine, got good signal reports. So that's a thumbs up for considering QRP more. But I'll tell you, I have many friends who do love QRP, and having done it a few times, I can appreciate their love for it. And this has been embraced by a lot of folks who I know personally who do QRP. They do love the tool. I expect it will mature, it will grow, it will improve over time. The thing that would be wonderful, of course, is if folks who are not QRP ops check it and try to work the QRP. I mean, it's great to be QRP to QRP. That's always good. But those of us who may not necessarily be running QRP, but want to see if we can get somebody who is QRP, that would be a nice add-on. So bravo. I have a feeling the best is yet to come. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, well, I'd say all three of you are very excited about this. I thought it was a really nice tool when I came across it and thought, yeah, I can embrace this. So that's a good one on that. Okay, move to our next news story. Hams get credit for advancing the information age. This is an Triple E story, and I believe you'll remember the IEEE, Dan. So do you want to go first on this one?
Sure. So I am an IEEE member, and, you know, some of the stuff that appears in IEEE publications tends to be real academic and, to be quite honest, over my head. But this particular article is a nice history of how radio amateurs played a part in the early days of radio and how they were able to advance the art. You know, that's part of our rules, right? That's what radio amateurs are supposed to do, is advance the state of the art. So there will be a link to this article, which is freely available. I thought maybe this was going to be hidden behind some kind of paywall, because IEEE kind of likes to do that. But this one is freely available, and it's a good read. It's a good read. There's lots of interesting stuff in here about the early days of amateur radio and what some hams did to, make the radio we know and love today a reality.
Yeah, certainly is, Dan. Certainly is. Well, Karen, you posted this one, so you got more thoughts on this one?
Yes. This article is full of wonderful surprises. So many of us love history. This is history. This actually is the second of a three-part series of articles that the IEEE is publishing on this topic. And there will be a third and final installment likely this fall having to do with that. It celebrates the curiosity, the spirit of experimentation, and it's not shy about dropping names to give real meaning and context to everything. It talks about Edwin Howard Armstrong, the father of FM radio, and his involvement on the Columbia University campus in New York City. How students drove a lot of the developments in early wireless. It's just fun. It's just fun. We're posting the link. I encourage people to read the article. There will be no final exam. Just read it for the sheer joy, the sheer pleasure of it. And if you can, hunt up the previous article as well, and then sit and wait patiently for the final piece in the puzzle, which comes out this fall. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what comes out on the next one. But this is a good one. No problems at all, Karen. And I think it's a good one. Now, Edmund, this is a good piece of history, I would suggest. And we'll probably clue in some of the things that you and I didn't know about. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't really have anything to add beyond what's already been said, other than Karen just mentioned Edwin Armstrong there. In the UK in the 1990s, there was a superb series of programs on Channel 4 introduced by Tim Hunkin and Rex Garrod called The Secret Life Of, and in each episode they looked at a different device, like a television, video recorder, refrigerator, telephone, that kind of thing. And there is one called The Secret Life of the Radio. It's on YouTube, so I assume it can be viewed worldwide. It's on Tim Hunkin's channel. It's half an hour long, and amongst many other things and people, it does cover Edwin Armstrong. So if you've not seen it, it's well worth a watch, as are all of the Secret Life Of episodes that are on YouTube. I'm sure you've watched some of them, haven't you, Martin?
Yeah, certainly have, mate. And they're very, very interesting, so I'll give you that one. All right. So all in all, a really good article that, you know, when you've got a few minutes, download it to your phone and or whatever device you've got, and have a read. You know, there's use it in your quiet time. I think you'll be very interested. Right, moving to our next news story. Hamsai have a workshop to review the new annual eclipse findings. So the eclipse findings that happened last year. And the workshop's taking place on March 22nd and 23rd. But they're also expecting another eclipse on the 8th of April in the Cleveland area. So all in all, I think this is starting to sound pretty good to me. Dan, do you want to go first on this one? Because you've met some of the guys.
So we've had an annular eclipse here, that partial eclipse here last fall. And the big one's coming up in April. And this is actually, like it says, a workshop, kind of a mini conference to discuss what HAMSI is doing to study this complete full eclipse. And it's, like I say, it's going to happen in April. And actually, I think it's going to go right over Cleveland. So it won't be happening when the conference is happening. It'll be a month later. But this will be an interesting conference. I actually went to this conference last year when they held it in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and it was really very interesting. A lot of interesting talks, a lot of interesting things. One thing I learned is that the radio waves actually shift frequency a little bit at when they bounce off the ionosphere, and it's just, I mean, so they're just, you know, really interesting stuff. I'm actually been in contact with these folks to go back again this year. Last year I was part of ARDC. This year I have to pay my own way. But I've offered to do a one-day tech class for them before the conference, so that folks that may not already have a license get a license. But overall, this is a great program, and this will be an interesting conference. And just as a prelude to the cool thing about this complete eclipse that we're going to have in April.
Yeah, certainly will, Dan. Certainly will. So I'm going to ask Edmund. Edmund, what's your thoughts on this sci-fi happening conference? And we're waiting for some interesting information. And they have started publicising some of this, so. It is good, isn't it?
Well, I'm rather jealous because we haven't had a full eclipse in the UK, or go over part of the UK anyway, since 1999. And it's been a good few years now since we've had a partial one. Was it 2015, 2016, somewhere around there was the last time. So I'm slightly jealous. I clearly live in the wrong country. I've said that a few times on the podcast, haven't I? And if I lived anywhere remotely close to this, I would be very interested in going. And I'll be interested to see what comes out of it as well, because there are lots of experiments people can do regarding monitoring how the ionosphere reacts. And I think the RSGB coordinated something, didn't they, last time in the UK, Martin? So yeah, I'm following with interest. Back to you.
Yeah, I think we all follow with interest because it's about education. Our hobby is about education. We're learning. And education is like islands. You learn one piece here in an island in there, and another piece on another island, and gradually you build the bridges between the islands, and that's where you get a much better understanding. But I quite like this one. Karen, what's your thoughts on it? It's interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting because it's a missing piece in a puzzle for a lot of people who participated back last year. They wanted hams. HAMSI wanted hams everywhere. Get on the air. Just get on the air. And everybody got on the air and everybody participated. So really, these results are your results. You got on the air. If you got on the air, your data is being presented at this conference. You have ownership. You have a stake in this. And I think that's really cool. It takes it down to a personal level, showing that, yes, we as hams, when we get on the air, can make a difference in research. And so it gives it meaning. It makes us feel like we are part of a bigger picture. And I really love that about this conference. And I also think it will provide even more incentive for people to participate in April. So I'm very excited about this. This is a second chance for a lot of people who didn't participate in the one last year. And it's a chance for the folks who did to see exactly how their data was being used. So can't wait. Can't wait to see and hear what happens. Back to you.
Yeah, and I think the only thing I can say to close this up, this particular story up, is it's nice to get transparency. Our data is being shown back to us. You know, we are part of this HAMSI thing. They've asked for our help, and they're telling us what we did, what the information they got from it, which is nice. You know, it's not just sort of disappeared into a black hole, never to be ever heard of again. So I think that's a good one. Right, moving to our last news story. Underground radio has a different meaning inside a bunker. Well, some of these bunkers are huge. I went to the secret nuclear bunker in Essex before Christmas, but there's now a system of bunkers on the air. Edmund, do you want to go first?
Okay, thanks, Martin. Well, bunkers on the air came out of nowhere in the middle of September last year, and initially it was a month-long event, and the only bunkers that qualified were the former ROC, Royal Observatory Corps, bunkers. So I thought, well, I'd better go and activate the two nearest to me, because maybe not many people will take part. This whole thing's been organised really quickly. A lot of people might not know about it, and in the nicest possible way, the organisers might need all the help they can get. So I did four activations altogether, the two nearest bunkers two times each. I could not have been more wrong. It absolutely took off and became wildly popular, to the extent that at the end of the month they decided, that the people who run it, the powers that be, decided that it would be an ongoing all year round thing, with maybe the occasional sort of special activity month here and there. So as part of that, this year bunker Golf Bravo Zero Romeo Oscar Charlie is on the air fairly regularly. And every time I've heard them on 40 meters, they have been an absolutely enormous signal, which is good news. The slight drawback with that is that they usually have a pile up to match. But a few weeks ago, I did manage to get through to them. And there was a video on YouTube, which I had watched previously, where there was a guided tour of this bunker. And they said, to get electricity in, they had to run a generator at the surface and then drop at the surface rather, and then drop cables down to get mains voltage in. But when I spoke to GB0 ROC a few weeks ago, the gentleman there said, actually, that's an earlier video and things have moved on since then. And I'm pretty sure that he told me they've now got mains electricity on tap somehow down there. So things are on the up on the luxury front by the sounds of things. They still have to have a Wi-Fi router at the surface though, to get an internet connection. And they're still using a DX commander pole and an antenna system, which clearly does the business for them very nicely. So it's a really nice setup they've got. And if you're in the UK or most of Europe, probably, you certainly won't have any trouble hearing them on 40 meters. And I'm sure they go on the higher bands as well for contacts a little bit further afield. And there's even a video on YouTube that was filmed by Carl, 2Echo0 Hotel Papa India, where he filmed a QSO on his IC705 when he was out portable, GB0ROC was at one end of the QSO and I was at the other, and we had a little bit of a chat about the setup in the bunker. So that's on Carl's YouTube channel if anybody wanted to have a look. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, I thought you'd be overexcited about this one, and I'm sure you'll carry on trying to work them a few more times and getting in their log. Karen, I know this is like a UK thing, but it's got to be a bit of fun. I mean, if you're out and you spot them, it's got to be a bit of fun to say, I worked a nuclear bunker in the UK, isn't it?
I would gladly work a nuclear bunker. As a chaser, totally. I'll chase anything. But this looks really looks like fun. And I saw photos inside of one of the bunkers where a ham club has their headquarters. And I first thought I had was, oh, I would never climb down that ladder and go into a bunker. But my understanding, and I hope I'm correct in assuming this, is you don't have to go into the bunker. You can be above ground and at the bunker, and you can still activate. What I like most about this whole concept is these bunkers represent a time in world history that was frightening. You know, Armageddon was on everybody's mind, probably still is to some extent. But these are symbols of a time in world history that was a difficult one. And I like the fact that these bunkers can be repurposed for a positive activity that is exciting. And yes, it can teach history, but I like the fact that it now serves as an activity that's a much more upbeat and enjoyable thing rather than what they were built for. As we said on Newsline, now instead of coming up from the bunker and giving reports of radioactivity, the only reports you're giving are signal reports. And that's really a much more upbeat way of looking at it. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah, certainly is. 5-9, thank you very much, is much better than, oh my God, what's that over there? Yeah. Okay. Dan, have we left you any words on this one left?
Well, I was trying to find their website to see if they might have a schedule of operations. Because I mean, I think it would be cool to do like a park to park with these folks here, but I didn't see that. But I mean, it looks like a great site, and maybe one of these days I'll have to have a trip over to England and do a park rove there. You know, I activate all these parks.
Well, that'd be a good one, Dan. Let's say we enjoy seeing you, obviously. If you come over for our National Ham Fest, although it's very enjoyable, it's nowhere near the size of Dayton, trust me.
Well, that's sort of to be expected, right?
Yeah, yeah. But all in all, I think it's a good one, and the bunkers, pretty exciting. Okay, let's see what you guys have been up to since the last time we spoke. I know last time we spoke on air was last year. So, Karen, ladies first, what have you been up to?
Well, it's straight key month, at least for a couple of more days. So I've been taking some shifts as a K3Y/2 and activating. Dan, thank you for the contact. You're in the log. I appreciated that. I wanted to say more when you contacted me, but thank you for that.
No worries at all.
It was fun, and I think I'll have two more shifts this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I'll be sad when January is over. It's really the best part of winter for me. Winter Field Day, I don't know if I'll be able to get out for that. I may end up chasing and supporting those who are outside. Straight Key Century Club, I did finally... I joke about this, really, but it's kind of cool. It took me 2 years. I qualified to become senator earlier this month, and I took it seriously. I for $30, I figured, have a little fun.
and I went out and bought a toga. So I now have the S after my membership number. And it's just basically a way of showing how active and committed somebody can be as an op. And it's been a wonderful journey. Regarding POTA, just very quickly, there hasn't been a whole lot of that because of the temperature. I did have last weekend, I guess I'd call it snowda. I went out after the snow because it had cleared enough, and did POTA from inside the SUV. So I was nice and warm, and it felt good to be out there. It reminded me how much I really, really love portable operating and can't wait to get back out there again. I'll just wear a couple of layers of whatever I need to wear to keep frostbite from setting in. And that's been it. Pretty simple, Martin. Back to you.
Yeah, well, I understand it's been cold out there on both sides of the pond, so getting out and about isn't so great, but it sounds like you've been having fun anyway, Karen, so that's certainly a good one. Edmund, what have you been up to?
Well, in terms of transmitting, I think the answer is absolutely nothing at all, unless I've had any QSOs that have slipped my mind. I think my contact with GB0 ROC was last year. In terms of listening, I've been doing some of that. I often have my analog Uniden Bearcat scanner going in the background. And although I don't have a dedicated antenna for 10 meters up at the moment, I know that band has been in good shape recently because my 10 meter lump of RG213 with my 70 centimeter vertically polarized Yagi on top of it works pretty well as a receiver antenna on 10 meters. I think at that frequency, it probably looks like the coax itself is the antenna and the Yagi on top is like a capacity hat. So I'm sure the SWR would be terrible if I ever tried to transmit through it. But for receive on 10 meters, it actually works far better than you might expect. And I regularly hear Kilo Quebec 2 Hotel, the New York repeater in the Catskill Mountains, on 29.620. Victor Echo 3 Mike X-ray, I think, in Ontario, comes in quite regularly on 29.640. And Romeo 3 Alpha Charlie in Moscow, that comes in very strongly and regularly on 29.670 as well. So plenty of stuff to listen to. And yeah, 10 meters is still in great shape. And hopefully 6 meters might open up via F2 propagation if the MUF maximum usable frequency goes high enough. So lots of stuff to listen to. Other than that, the only other thing that's coming up in the near future, Martin, that I imagine you might mention in a few moments, is on the first Sunday in February, I plan to go to the Sears South, S-E-A-R-S, South Essex Amateur Radio Society. I think that's what it stands for. The rally that they have on Canvey Island, and I'm really looking forward to it, Martin.
Yeah, so am I, mate. So really am. Yes, South Essex Amateur Radio Society, CS stands for. So I just brought it up very quickly. We're there, as you say. Now let me get back to what I had. So Dan, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
Well, I tell you what, I haven't been doing any POTA like Karen. I haven't been on a POTA activation for a couple of months, so I'm kind of jonesing on that. I'd really like to see it warm up here a little bit before I can get out there again. But what I have been doing is still working on my book on the upgrade to the extra class study guide. That's going really well. And last time, if you recall, last time I was on the podcast, we had talked about this K KPH event where they were sending out a number station broadcast, and that happened last Saturday. And I did copy the message and successfully decoded it. So that was a lot of fun. It was something really different and kind of, like I said, just a lot of fun. So, yeah, that's basically what I've been up to. In addition, of course, to all my my normal CW operating every day. So back to you.
Yeah, sounds like you've been having fun, Dan. And I take it you're not going to tell us on air what the decode was, because other people might have been struggling and send your answer in as well.
Well, it's supposed to be a secret, right? If they want, they can contact me. I'll send it to them by email. It doesn't really matter. Like, you had to respond within 72 hours to get the certificate. So,
all right. So hopefully you're going to get the certificate, which is good news, and that'll be a bit of fun. Right. Yeah, sounds like you've been having fun, Dan.
It was. It was a blast.
What have I been up to? Well, mainly, I've been working on a project with Frank, K4FMH, and I've been doing the UK arm. And we've run the first Saturday morning amateur radio time demonstration at a local library. Gotta say, it was a slow burner. It was January, probably lack of interest from people. We didn't get that many people turn up. Those that did went away, you know, quite pleased. We'd answered some questions. We'd showed some interesting things that amateur radio does. And I think it was worth doing. We will be running another one this Saturday, the day before this podcast releases, but I'll let you know it did. Hopefully it'll do quite well, rather. I did produce a booklet that we use to show people, because I've found lots of illustrations, and I've put these illustrations into a folder so that when you talk to people about, let's say, propagation, I can talk about propagation and people glaze over. If you show them a picture while you're talking about it and point it out on the picture, they far more understand. And I've done things, look, some of them are little funny things in there as well, but it's there just as a help us to explain it to the end user. And it's free. I'm going to make it freely available later on when I've finished it. So, well, it'll never be finished. It's a work in progress, because as more good stuff comes along, it'll just get added to it. But a useful little thing that I've produced for that. I've done a little bit of operating on 2 meters, 70 sems, 4 meters, and 23 sems. A few contacts on the talk group and catching up with people on that, which has been good. And unfortunately, not been as busy on that as I would like to have been, but been busy on that. There's been a couple of updates to the PiStar software that are well worth you doing. That gives some new features, which I think fairly soon we'll be having M17 available on it. What else have we been doing? Oh, yeah. I spent some time producing a frequency list, or programming up a radio with the repeaters frequencies for when I come out to the States. We're out for Dayton, and I've programmed the radio up because we're going to do a bit of a road trip afterwards, Chris, Colin, and I. And we end up going, well, we end up going through five states. And I plotted our route, and then I decided only to do 2 meter FM repeaters. But we've looked at all the 2 meter FM repeaters, and I've programmed them into the radio. So we should be able to chat to people as we're on our road trip after Dayton. I did have a nice surprise. Chris turned up at the club the other day, Chris Howard, M0TCH. And he said, "Martin, I got you something." I went, "What?" He said, "No, it's a Prezi." And I went, "Yeah, what?" And he went, "Here you go." And he gave me one of these Quangshengs. This is a UV K6, mine's a UV K5. I can't see a lot of difference between them, in all honesty. However, the one Chris gave me is bright orange. He said, there you go. It's an ICQ radio because it's bright orange. So bit of fun, but I've got a Quanxiong that's bright orange. And did mess around, and my Yaesu FT2D, I decided to put a new charger block on it. The wall wart that plugs into the wall wasn't particularly good on the one I had. I don't think it was an original. So I rewired another 12-volt power plug, and that's now working great. Going forward, Canvey Island Rally happens on the 4th of February, and we'll be mentioning more on that on social media as well. But Canvey Island Rally, which is Sears, we will be there, Edmund, myself at least, maybe some others as well. This Saturday I'm doing another smart radio at the library, so we'll see how that goes for 3 hours. We operate for 3 hours at the library in the morning, and then in the afternoon I'll be up on Epsom Downs with a couple of other amateurs because it's 145 Alive. Now, unfortunately, this is going to happen before you hear this, but 145 Alive happens every so often. It's a way of getting 2 meters of VHF contacts, and there's loads of big nets most of Saturday afternoon all over the UK, so it's and other places, so it would be worth a look. And it's looking like 2 days after the podcast gets released, I'm out with another amateur who decided that he was 70 last year, and he wanted to do 70 walks with friends in a year. And he's asked me to go for a wander with him. He's an amateur, and he's talking about taking me to 3 SOTA sites in one day. So as long as the weather's not horrendously bad, and I'll be doing 3 SOTA sites as well. So a couple of things I'm going to be doing, and hopefully the smart radio will take off a bit better this time. So I think you can say, guys, we've been pretty busy on that one, and great fun along the way. So all's left for me to do is thank the guys for turning up tonight, and we're going to continue with the rest of the podcast. I'd like to thank Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT.
Thank you, Martin. It's always fun.
Yeah, it was great fun in the group, and I enjoy it with all of you. I'd like to thank Mr. Dan Romacek, KB6NU.
Well, thank you. It was a blast as always.
Yeah. And last but not least, my side of the pond, Mr. Edmund Spicer, M0MMG. And unfortunately, Mr. Ed Durant, DD5LP, was unable to join us, as he's taking a well-earned break this episode. So he'll be back the next one. Right. I'll say 73, guys, and we'll catch you all soon. 73.
73. Keep your amateur ham radio podcast advert-free by donating less than a length of coax. Visit www.icqpodcast.com/donate now. For all the news, links and information, visit www.icqpodcast.com.
And now it's time to have a look at the news in brief from me, Colin, M6BOY. We start off with news here of British Science Week and the RSGB getting involved. The British Science Week runs from the 8th to the 17th of March, and this year's theme is the theme of time. Now, the event is an opportunity, obviously, to raise amateur radio across the UK, and the RSGB are working on some activity and ideas you could try it with your local school, scout, guiding group, or your local youth group clubs across the UK. Now, RSGB volunteer John Hislop, Golf 7 Oscar Hotel Oscar, has provided some of the ideas, but the RSGB are very open to more people getting involved and, as they showing, the way forward. So you can find out all the details about what the RSGB are doing by going to rsgb.org/ Bravo Sierra Whiskey, BSW, where Ian Neal, the Science Week coordinator's contact details are available, and you can get involved with promoting amateur radio across British Science Week. In Jackson, USA, the Jackson Amateur Radio Club has donated two complete sets of ARRL books and posters on valuing the hobby and the support in amateur radio. And this is valued at approximately $2,000 to the Madison County Library System in Mississippi. Frank Howe, K4 Foxtrot Mike Hotel, assistant director of the ARRL Delta region, and of course our own ICQ podcast presenter, comments that these book titles represent the brain trust of what we know about the amateur radio hobby today. We hope they will plant the seed and sow the future for radio-based technology in Madison County. The books published by the ARRL include topics on basic electronics, antenna building, rules and regulations, and amateur radio license study guides. A great work there by the guys in Madison County and the Delta region of continuing to help, as they sow that seed and plant the hobby from there. In Nebraska, there's been great news and success on the ARRL Kids Day, where an event was held in early January, and to say lots of people getting involved. Parents were impressed with the Kids Day, with one parent being commented saying that the event organized by the Yates Science Club was a perfect blend of education, technology and community spirit. My kids were thrilled to delve into a world of amateur radio thanks to the expert guidance of the Bellevue Amateur Radio Club. They learned about radio technology and how to contact other young radio enthusiasts across the country. This hands-on experience in communication technology was not only fun but also incredibly educational. So congratulations to the guys there from the Bellevue Club for taking part in that event. And our last news story in the news in brief section is in relation to Australia, where a new class-based license structure is about to come on stream. It takes place on the 19th of February, and so there's letters going out to various hams, etc., to advise them of the changes required. Main thing is that if you've got a license that requires changing, you can carry on using your existing privileges until the 9th of December, so giving you plenty of time to get that arranged from there. But as always, best to contact the local regulator to make sure that you are compliant in your operating in Australia. Right, we head over to our features episode. Our features episode is a feature on the Bunkers on the Air Station, GB0 Romeo Oscar Charlie. So as always, hope you enjoy.
And now what you've all been waiting for, this episode's feature from the ICQ podcast.
GB0 Romeo Oscar Charlie, you have Delta Delta 5, Lima Papa.
Delta Delta 5, Lima Papa. Yeah, we need a new front end. yeah, we're booming through. signals off the scale there. Operator name here is Sharon, operating from the North Yorkshire Mars nuclear bunker. Back to you.
Hi and welcome to this edition's feature on the GB0 ROC station at the Castleton ROC Cold War Bunker. How this started was a chance contact with Sharon operating GB0 ROC on 20 metres SSB. She was a booming signal as you heard, so I gave her a call and we had a nice short QSO. I had recognised ROC as being the Royal Observer Corps and thought this would be a portable station located within 1 kilometre of a bunker, as allowed in the UK Bunkers on the Air scheme. It was only when Sharon told me that she and other members of the Gisborough Radio Club were actually operating from within the bunker, underground, that I realised this contact was something out of the ordinary, and worth looking further into for ICQ podcast listeners. I found the person behind the operations is Mark Dutton, G0UOK, and he was kind enough to agree to an interview. So without further ado, hello Mark.
So good evening Mark, thank you for agreeing to the interview with me. And the background to this is that I actually had a contact with GB0 ROC a few days ago and found out about all your activities. So how did you get the idea to start up with the special event station and the link to the ROC bunker in Castleton?
It was an accident, really. I used to live in Castleton. It's only a small village on the North Yorkshire Moors, and I lived there for 13 years. And they have a little Facebook page, and it popped up on there one day that this bunker had been renovated. Well, I knew it had been renovated, but they were having an open day. And I just thought it would go really well with the radio. So I came up with the idea of approaching the owner of it and asking him about a special event station.
And was that before the Bunkers on the Earth scheme started a few months ago?
Yeah, it was, yeah. We've been we've been running at the bunkers for about 12 months now.
All right. And for our viewers, of course, the key point here is you're not running at the bunker, you're running in the bunker.
Yeah, we're actually inside. We're 5 metres below ground. Although, because we like to keep the club inclusive for everybody, we do organise special events from the surface.
Yeah, and that obviously, I think you said, coincides with the open days.
Some of them do, yeah. When there's an open day at the bunker, this is all the artefacts are in the bunker, because we don't keep anything in there. All the artefacts, and it's all set up as it was when it was operational. And Jack, the owner of the bunker, goes along and members of the public come along. We set up a small gazebo with the radio equipment. And we've got various, we've got modern equipment, but we've got some vintage military radios. The kids are really keen on the Klansman 320 man pack.
Right.
Because they like to put it on the back and feel the weight of it and things like that. It's quite funny when you put it on the back of a 10-year-old and they fall over backwards.
Well, nowadays you see some of the school satchels some of them carry. I'm surprised they don't fall over with those. But, yeah, that's good. And you said it was... Sorry, I've forgotten the name already. The gentleman that owns the bunker.
Yeah, that's Jack.
That's Jack. And so he bought it from the government at some point, or...?
No, you can't buy it. It's located on estate land. So he's got the lease for it. He doesn't actually own it, but he has the lease of it.
And he's been behind restoring it to make it almost like a museum?
Yeah, that's right. He actually owns an army surplus store, so he's interested in that sort of stuff.
Yeah, all fits together. And can you give us a quick, like, 3 or 4 line description of what these bunkers did when and why?
Well, the ROC actually was formed during the war, and they were dotted about all over the UK, and they, the intended purpose was that they would spot enemy aircraft, and then they had different silhouettes. So they would try to distinguish what type of aircraft it was, mm-hmm. and which direction it was flying. So they would communicate that with Bomber Command, and they would obviously liaise with our fighters and send the fighters up. Now, after that, when we went into the Cold War, they built these bunkers, and the role then was, if there was a nuclear war, was to report the bomb blasts back to London, and then the government could monitor like the fallout and the direction it was going in.
Yeah, so the hope was that you wouldn't be hit by the first blast by being underground. But then surely it would be a very dangerous job for people there anyway because of the radiation afterwards.
It would be, yeah. These bunkers, although they are blast-proof, kind of, they aren't nuclear-proof, so there's no air filtration system or anything like that. The headquarters, each region has a headquarters. The one for our bunker would be located in Durham, and they were big affairs, and they had air filtration systems and things like that. But the small three-man posts like we use, yeah, there's no air filtration, so you possibly would succumb to the fallout eventually.
Yeah, and you come on to a point there. It's a very small, because I've watched the video from your website, and it's very small down there, very cramped area for people to live in for a few days.
Yeah, we've been down there for 2 days. We competed in the ARRL contest, and we did 48 hours down there, and there was a team of four of us, and it is a bit cosy, and it's nice to know that you can go to the surface, because for me, every 2 or 3 hours, I need to stick my head out of the top.
Yeah, but you don't want to be claustrophobic down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell me about the special... Well, first of all, tell me about the Gisborough and District ARC. They existed prior to this bunker station, right?
Yeah, we set up during COVID, and it was an idea of a guy called Ron G0MBV and myself, and we were just talking, and we said, you know, during COVID, should we just start up a net? So we started a local net, and that was quite popular. And then when we came out of COVID, and we said, oh, you know, we'd meet up in the pub, and we'd put faces to the people we were talking to. And then it just materialised from there. We started to charge a club fee, and initially that was just to cover their subscription to the RSGB. Mm-hmm. And now we've got about 20 paid up members, and we've got a Facebook page with, I think it's 80 or 90 local people on it.
So it's a virtual club, or do you actually meet in a pub sometime?
No, we meet every week on a Monday night in the club in Gisborough. Mm. And anyone's welcome to come along. But we do have the Facebook page, and we find that other members from other clubs in the area like to join in on the Facebook page, and we post up there things that we do. So the open days at the bunker... We put up there, we've just had an organised trip to the control tower at Newcastle Airport, and we're looking at doing a trip into the here Filindale's RAF station as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the group's actually quite active then, that's nice to hear. When you actually went to the group or told them either online or in person that you had this idea of putting on the station at the bunker, the Royal Observance Corps bunker, what was the reaction from the other members?
Yeah, we had a good positive reaction. We'd already done a special event station. We had a special event weekend for the Queen's Jubilee. Mm-hmm. And we manned that for a full weekend, including the night shift. And we managed to work 42 American states in one night. So wow. A lot of people were quite interested in the bunker. And like I said, the special event station, we also put the field weekends on up at the bunker. This is where we set it up on the surface. So we have the big gazebo on the surface. Mm-hmm. We run the generator. We've got a 15-metre trailer mast, a full-size four-element Yagi on 20 metres. We use a DX Commander quarter-wave vertical antenna. So we've got quite some interesting equipment up there.
Yeah, and that DX Commander vertical was what I think I worked Sharon on. She was booming in here, well over the Nine down into the south of Germany. So it was that the strength of the signal that attracted me to your station on the band to start with. So the setup there, I guess you're quite a low RF noise level up there at the bunker as well.
Yeah, there's no RF noise at all, so we're running kind of like S1, S2.
Yeah.
So we can hear all the quiet stations. But the other thing that the bunker's done is the contact that you've made with Sharon. Mm-hmm. Now, Sharon is only a foundation license holder, so she's restricted currently to 10 watts in the UK.
Yeah.
But by putting the bunker on and running with a special event call sign, it gives the foundation license holders a chance to use the bigger station, and Sharon was running on 100 watts.
Yep. Yeah, that's good, because, I mean, even from my time back in the UK, it used to be that the Class A licensees could let the Class B licensees operate under supervision under the club call sign, and it's a similar sort of setup, and I believe it's going to change a little bit next year with the new regs from Ofcom, but it's great to give people the opportunity to see what benefits they'll get by studying and getting the higher licence.
Yeah, definitely. You know, next year, the foundation licences are going up to 25 watts. The full licences, yep, ourselves, we're going up to a kilowatt. So that will be quite interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to run a kilowatt down a bunker.
Well, we're well shielded from it being 5 metres below ground.
Well, that's true, isn't it? So is there any funny stories of anything that happened? You know, somebody got stuck on the loo down in the bunker or anything? Or
we don't have a toilet down the bunker. There is one, but it's a vintage chemical toilet, okay. So we don't use that.
Right.
We do take one for the field there, and mm-hmm. we have a toilet tent on the surface. But no, I think the only thing we've had is somebody drop the glasses down the ladder and break the glasses. But yeah, we've got a lad who is slightly disabled, and it's always fun trying to get him down the ladder. Hmm. But we're having to take precautions at the moment, and we're looking into getting a safety harness for him.
Yeah. What are there, or were there, any legal or insurance problems that you had to get over before you were allowed to operate there?
Not for us, because being it's something that we've looked into, because Jack has had some issues with the estate, because mm-hmm. they've asked for insurance for things like public liability and
yes.
things like that.
As soon as you have a large event, they'll want public liability insurance.
Yes, so that's for his open days.
Yeah.
So it kind of prompted me to get in touch with the insurance company to cover us via the RSGB membership.
Yeah.
And I spoke to them, and they said that as long as it was a radio event and not a bunker open day, then everything would be fine. We would be covered under the RSGB public liability insurance.
Okay, that's good news. Now, tell me, what did you have to do to the bunker to be able to get the equipment inside? I mean, cabling, power, coax, and all the rest of it. I mean, was that a long job?
No, it's not. What we do is everything's lowered down. We don't keep anything in the bunker.
Yeah.
So everything's lowered down. So we drop down we have an FTD X10, which is in a flight case.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a flight case with the computer equipment in, so we drop down the laptop. And we used to run a generator on the surface, but I've just built a lithium iron phosphate battery pack. So we drop that down the bunker as well. That's a 280 amp hour battery pack. So that will run the FTD X10 on full power for a full weekend.
Oh, okay.
So we drop that down into the bunker. Mm-hmm. And then we have to run down, we only run down two cables now. So we run the coax down the shaft, and we run a Cat 5. We have a 4G router on the surface, and we run the Cat 5 cable down for the laptop. So we've got access into QRZ.
Right.
And what we do is, obviously, we just cable tie that onto the back of the ladder to keep it out of the way, just to keep so people don't trip over.
Okay, so you haven't put anything permanently in place. It's all has to be put in each time you come?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So how long does it take to set up then?
Half an hour.
Oh, that's not so bad.
The longest thing to put up is the DX Commander.
Right.
But we have that stored in a bag, and we keep all the wires attached to it. So that's just a case of extending the pole and then putting the guy ropes onto it and connecting the radials. So that's literally, that's up and ready to go in about 20 minutes.
Oh, that's very good.
We can have the station on my own. I can have the station up and running in about half an hour.
But it is a complete portable installation then, isn't it, really? Because I had the impression from what I've seen on the website and on the video that some of the cabling was in there permanently, but you've got to run it every time you want to go, which I suppose is good because then when you leave, you can seal everything up.
Yeah, everything's sealed up. And yeah, like I say, we don't leave anything in there. But sometimes if I just go up for half an hour, what I'll do is I'll operate from the surface.
In the car.
I've got the ATAS 120 and the 857 in the car, so I do have the option just to go up there and work for half an hour or so from the car.
Best of both worlds. Okay, so are there any upcoming open days or special events again for GB0ROC?
Yes, there are. We're having a field day weekend. Let me just check the diary. It's in June,
mm-hmm.
and it is the weekend of... It starts on the 21st of June, and we run through to the 23rd. So we'll be running it for the 3 days, starting off on Friday evening, and we'll finish round about sometime mid-afternoon on the Sunday.
Okay, for our American and Australian listeners, by field day, do you mean a contest or do you mean just portable operating?
Yeah, just portable operating. So
okay, so this doesn't coincide with the RSGB HF field day?
No, this is just, it's a club field day for club members. But also the other event we've got actually, now you've reminded me, we are hoping to put a contest team on in March for the ARRL voice contest.
Okay, HF.
The HF contest, yeah.
Oh, well, good luck with that. And what antennas for that? Will you just go with the vertical?
We have the full-size Yagi, which is a four-element. That's our main antenna. Now, last year, it was our first year last year,
mm-hmm.
So we were hoping to enter as a multi-entry single band, but at the very last minute we found out that we couldn't run single band, it was multi-band. So we put the DX Commander up and we made out of bamboo cane and some bits of wire a director and a reflector, and we hammered them in the ground at half a wavelength. And tried to cobble up to a kind of makeshift Yagi for 10 metres.
With the DX Commander being the driven element?
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a video on YouTube. I'll send you the link to that.
Yeah, we'll put all these links into the show notes of the podcast.
Yeah.
And, so you really do sound to have a very active group there, which is nice to hear. The number of people I talk to nowadays were, you know, they're not really doing that much. But it's great to hear that that you're so active, and perhaps because it's only, what, 2 years old, the club?
Yeah, 3 years old.
3 years old. So it's still a very young club. Yeah, so with the open days, I think I heard somewhere that you go along to do the demonstration upstairs, on the surface. Do you get people coming along and asking what the heck is amateur radio there?
Yes, they come and they have a look at the radios and things like that, and when they say, what are you doing, and we say amateur radio, the next question is normally, what type of music do you play?
Yeah. Oh, well, at least they've made an inquiry, and it's always good if you've got, you know, some simple brochures to give out or whatever, and get more people interested. The fact that you're out in the middle of the countryside there operating and talking to people at distance, it's, you know, there'll be a few people that will be coming, following up and saying, you know, how do we do something?
So I was at the bunker one time, and a couple turned up. They were just out walking, And the female started talking to me, and she said, "Oh, what band are you on? What frequency are you on?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm on." I was like, "I'm on 20 meters." So she said, "Oh, 14 megahertz." I was like, "Yeah." And it turned out that she was a scientist, and she was involved with Fujitsu, I think it was, and she was involved with the mobile phones.
Oh, okay. So it's interesting. People walk up and you generally think they'll not know anything, and sometimes you can be surprised. Talking of all that, though, what's the best way for anybody in the area around Gisborough that might hear this podcast interview and want to contact you? Is it best over the QRZP email address?
Yeah, if you look up GB0ROC on QRZ or my call sign, which is G0UOK, or the other way is to have a look at Gisborne District Amateur Radio Club page on Facebook.
Okay, well, I hope a few people do that, and thank you for taking the time. And just to say, what you're doing is actually quite unique, so you should be quite proud that you've put this together.
Yeah, thank you. We had a feature as well in Radcom, and we got quite a lot of positive feedback from the Radcom article as well.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And, yeah, hopefully a few of the ICQ podcast listeners will look out for you and work the station when it's on down there. And hopefully everything will go well, both in the ARRL HF voice contest and also at your own field day in June there.
Yeah, thank you, Ed.
So thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciated the time with you, and as I say, I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you. It'll be good to catch you again on air.
I hope so. 73.
73, goodbye.
Well, there you have it. The story of a new club formed by Mark and Ron, G0NBO, through a small net during the pandemic that has grown into an active local club supporting a historical site while getting a great contesting and club field day site in the process. Look out for the club call sign MX0NYM during the ARRL SSB contest and GB0ROC during the club field day between the 21st and 23rd of June, as well as at other times. For more information on the Gisborough and District ARC, check out their QRZ, Facebook and club web pages. ICQ Podcast wish Mark and the group all the best for their future activities, whether 5 metres below ground or out on the hills of the North Yorkshire Moors. The links to the YouTube videos and the Gisborough Club Facebook and QRZ pages are listed in the show notes at icqpodcast.com. For ICQ Podcast, this is Ed Durant, DD5LP.
Whether it's across the pond or over the channel, the ICQ Podcast is international.
Herzlich willkommen in Deutschland.
Good evening.
73 de España.
Aguda.
By amateurs, for amateurs.
Well, many thanks to our friend and colleague Ed Durant, DD5 Lima Papa, for this episode's feature on the Bunkers on the Air station, GB0 Romeo Oscar Charlie. And I hope you guys enjoyed that feature. Now, as always, the greatest way to get in contact with us is many ways, the social media channels, as you'd expect, but also by going to icqpodcast.com, where you can send in the contact form to us, and it'd be great to hear on your feedback on our episode feature. While you're there, as I mentioned, this show is funded by the very generous donations by annual and monthly subscription donors. You can either set up a subscription donation or a one-off donation to help us with our running costs and pay our way, and that would be fantastically appreciated if you could consider us from there. We'd obviously like to thank the guys who took part in the News Roundtable with Martin, M1MRB, and that's Dan, KB6, November Uniform, Karen, KD2, Golf Uniform Tango, and Edmund, Mike0, Mike November Golf. Many thanks, guys, for taking part in that News Roundtable with us there. Right, with that, about rounds up episode 422 of your ICQ Amateur Radio podcast. So we thank you for listening, as always, to our show, and we'll catch you again in a fortnight's time. 73's all.